This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new movie, American Splendor, is an adaptation of the comic book series of the same name. No, it's not another movie based on a superhero. The American Splendor comics are a series of autobiographical stories by Harvey Pekar, which he's published since 1976. They're about his daily life, working as a file clerk in Cleveland's VA hospital, collecting jazz records, running into annoying friends and strangers on the street, dealing with the ups and downs of married life, and being constantly disgruntled about how little money he makes. His book-length comic, Our Cancer Year, co-written with his wife Joyce Brabner, was about having lymphoma. Pekar doesn't draw, so he relies on artists to illustrate American Splendor, including his old friend R. Crumb. The movie stars Paul Giamatti as Pekar and Hope Davis as Joyce Brabner. They first connected through letters and phone calls when Brabner was a partner in a comic book store in Delaware. Here's a scene from one of those early phone calls.
So you married or what?
I'm divorced, thank God.
Look, I think you and I got a lot in common. You know? How am I going to get you to come visit me in Cleveland?
Cleveland?
Yeah.
You think that's a good idea?
Yeah, it's a great idea. You know, you should meet me because I'm a great guy. You know? Despite the way my comics read, I got a lot of redeeming characteristics.
I don't know. Where would I stay?
I don't know, with me. You know, don't worry. I'm not going to put no moves on you or anything.
I'm not worried about that. Hold on. I just spilled my chamomile tea all over me.
Yeah.
Although American Splendor stars Hope Davis and Paul Giamatti, the real Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner are interviewed within the film, commenting about their lives. The movie won the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. We invited Pekar and Brabner to talk with us. Harvey Pekar, Joyce Brabner, welcome to Fresh Air. How do you think the movie American Splendor compares with your real lives? Harvey, let's start with you on that.
My real life? I'm even more harried and frantic than you see there.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Joyce, what do you think?
Well, it's, you know, we're watching people who look better than we do and, you know, sitting on furniture that's better than the stuff that we have. And for some reason, everything that's happening to them has an arc and it seems to all be taken care of in, what, 80, 90 minutes, you know. So things go awfully fast.
Whereas real life leads in many directions
yeah.
and in slow motion.
Yeah.
Could we listen to a scene together from early in the film American Splendor? And in this scene, well, let me back up and say, Joyce, you were a partner in a comic book store in Delaware and a fan of
right.
American Splendor. And then you and Harvey started communicating by mail and then phone. Then you decided to meet in Cleveland, where Harvey lived and still lives. And then Harvey, in the movie, Harvey takes you, Joyce, to a restaurant. And here's the scene as you're looking over the menus. This is right after you first met. And Hope Davis is playing Joyce Brabner. Paul Giamatti is playing Harvey Pekar.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
Something's wrong. You keep looking around everywhere.
I guess I never imagined you'd eat in a place like this.
What, me? No, I've never been here. I thought you'd like it. But obviously you don't, do you?
It's fine. What difference does it make?
I don't know. None, I guess. Man, you got a lot of meat on this menu.
You're a vegetarian?
Kinda, you know. I mean, ever since I got a pet cat, you know, I've had a lot of trouble eating animals.
I support and identify with groups like PETA, but unfortunately, I'm a self-diagnosed anemic.
Uh-huh.
Also, I have all these food allergies to vegetables, which give me serious intestinal distress. I guess I have a lot of borderline health disorders that limit me politically when it comes to eating.
Wow, you're a sick woman.
Not yet, but I expect to be. Everyone in my family has some sort of degenerative illness.
That's a scene from American Splendor with Hope Davis portraying my guest Joyce Brabner and Paul Giamatti portraying my guest Harvey Pekar, and it's based on Harvey's comics American Splendor. Harvey, Joyce, what's it like to hear Giamatti and Davis portraying you?
Well, it's not strange. A lot of times people think that it's strange for me to hear somebody playing me in a theater or in a movie or something like that, but it's not, because, well, I'm not saying that, you know, other people wouldn't find it strange, but I don't find it strange because people have been drawing me in comics for 30 years or more,
right?
And they've been I've been in a few documentary movies, and the book has been dramatized about four times, or portions of it about four times, you know, before an audience. So it's not unusual. I guess I've gotten used to the idea of somebody else portraying me.
Joyce?
Well, you know, I'm alternately just knocked out by the accuracy in spirit, if not in fact, that comes out. I mean, I think they nailed us. But you also wince at the little things that aren't exactly the way you remember them.
Well, good. Would you compare that scene from the film
with what really happened
in the restaurant when you went out to dinner?
Okay. Well, Harvey didn't take me to a really fashionable, you know, yuppie chain. He took me to McDonald's. And I just was a real good sport and sat there and ate the French fries. he was, but I guess Bob and Sherry decided that I deserved better. And
they're the directors and writers.
The directors, right. And then they based some of what they saw on observations of us as we are now. And actually at the time, I was the vegetarian, and Harvey would eat different kinds of meat. And that was my cat that turned Harvey into an ardent vegetarian after we moved in. So, but it's, you know, who cares? I mean, these are things that I don't even think my mother knows.
So Joyce, Hope Davis said that when she was acting early on in American Splendor, that she that you were giving her suggestions, and it was making her very self-conscious to have you on the set, so that she asked you if you could leave. And I think it made her very uncomfortable asking you to do that, but she was just getting so self-conscious. What's your memory of that?
It's pretty different because the only contact I had with Hope was, you know, the time that we spent together before she went to work acting. We spent some time, and, you know, she had questions, and I tried to give her some answers and some explanations, you know, backstory, things like that, what was, you know, behind some of the stuff that was in the script. But I went down and I watched it, and I watched it from a distance, and I got a message from Ted Hope, the producer, sort of took me aside and said, Hope is freaking out. She feels like, you know, your eyes are burning into the back of her neck, and she just feels very, very uncomfortable doing this with you. And so I was asked not to come down and watch, although they did arrange for me to, from time to time, look at it through the remote or, I don't know, hide me out in the bushes or something like that. So it made me a little uncomfortable during lunch breaks because I would never know, you know, I tried to sit as far away from her as possible. And, you know, she'd say, come on over here. And I think, I don't want to contaminate her with my Joyce-ness or whatever it is. But I never gave her any suggestions on the set. I never said anything. You can't do that because you have to be quiet and let them film.
When you both decided to meet in Cleveland, what were you expecting from each other? Harvey, what did you expect Joyce was going to be like? And did you think that this was going to be your wife?
Oh, I was sort of hoping it. Yeah. I expected she'd be like she'd been on the phone, you know, like pretty straightforward, maybe a little acerbic, and with a good sense of humor, and, you know, basically a pretty honest person, and, you know, a person who's pretty loyal. And I guess that's what I got.
Joyce, what you were expecting, based on not only your phone calls with Harvey, but, you know, reading his autobiographical comics?
It wasn't the reading. It was strictly the visuals. I thought much about this guy, but I really had to check him out in person to see whether or not he smelled bad, he had any twitches, Tourette-like syndrome, you know, symptoms, things like that, because I had no real clue as to what he looked like. And, you know, like I said in, I said in real life before I said it in the movie, that with the range of artists from Jerry Shamray to R. Crumb, you know, Harvey was presented to me as anything from, you know, the missing link to just this sort of, you know, this sort of noble, you know, with a high forehead, you know, young Brando type.
So where do you think he falls in that range? What did you think of him when you met him?
Well, he was more muscular than I thought he would be.
Harvey, in the movie, the first thing you say to Joyce when she gets off the bus in Cleveland is, you know, right off the bat, I want you to know I've had a vasectomy. Right. Is that the first thing you really said to her?
He said that to me when we were talking over the phone. When I said I was coming out, he just blurted it out. But they don't show too much of the telephone conversation,
right.
So they just moved that up a bit. But it really had that kind of impact, you know, and just came out apropos of nothing.
Did that seem presumptuous to you?
To me?
Yeah.
It seemed Harvey.
You met Crumb in 1962 when he moved to Philadelphia from Philadelphia.
Cleveland, yes.
And he lived
yes.
around the corner from you, and you used to go record
right.
collecting together. He wrote
right.
an introduction to the first collection of American Splendor comics, the first anthologized version. And,
yeah.
and I'm going to read something that he said. He said, "Harvey was the first person I ever met who was a genuine hipster. I was very impressed. He was heavily into modern jazz, had big, crazy, abstract paintings on the wall of his pad, talked bop lingo, had shelves and shelves of books and records, and never cleaned his apartment. He was seething, intense, burning up, always moving, pacing, jumping around, just like a character out of Kerouac." What kind of connection did you make with Crumb? I know you shared a passion for music, for record collecting, but look, what was it about your sensibilities that you think really connected?
Well, I liked him very much personally, I'll say that. He was a real calm, quiet person. I mean, I know he's done some pretty wild things, but talking to him, you know, had a calming effect on me. And I guess you could figure if I was like Crumb said I was, I needed some calming down. And later on, I can remember discussing my theories about comics with him, like as to what kind of stories you could put in them. Or, you know, I was telling him I thought you could put any kind of stories in them, or, you know, things like that. And so for years, these ideas were percolating in my mind about how to do a different kind of comic book. And in 1972, when Crumb was staying with me at my house or at my apartment building, I wrote down some of the stories I had made up, and I did it in storyboard fashion with panels and dialogue and captions and directions to the artists. And he looked at them and he said, "Wow, these are fine, you know, like, could I take some of these home, illustrate them?" And I was just totally, you know, knocked out. I mean, that Crumb illustrating my stuff would give it instant credibility, you know. And I was thrilled, And I've always been very grateful to Crumb for doing that. I mean, if not for him, I probably would not have gotten into comics at all.
When he first drew you, now you're used to all kinds of artists drawing you, and you're used to actors portraying you. But that first time when he drew you, when you were not used to it, what did you think of the way he drew you? And I should mention that I think of all the artists' portrayals of you that I've seen, his portrayals of you are the most kind of, you know, like neurotic and worried looking and ethnic looking.
Yeah. Well, I was a neurotic, worried ethnic and still am. I was just very impressed. Crumb just never disappoints me when he illustrates my work, and he sometimes surprises me by doing things I didn't expect. I mean, like, for example, in a story called Hypothetical Quandary, that and maybe some other stories too, his work really knocked me out because this was a straight, serious story, and his illustration was less cartoony and more realistic than it normally was, and it worked. It seemed like nothing this guy could do, you know, it seemed like everything the guy did worked. You know, he was that sharp, that keen.
And you never said to me, like, make me more handsome.
Oh, no, I would never presume to do that. No. I mean, I didn't tell people on the movie set what to do, and I didn't tell Crumb. I don't tell these people, you know, usually what to do. It's just like I just give them an assignment and I take, you know, pretty much what's given to me. I mean, I've fortunately been working with a lot of really good artists, and I don't have to, you know, struggle or fight for what I want.
Joyce, you were a reader of American Splendor before you met
you
Harvey.
You should ask me about how I looked how I felt when I was first rendered in the comic.
I'll go ahead, answer that question.
Okay. I did ask that I not be drawn like a comic book female. And the first artist who drew
me... Wait, comic book female meaning like big curvaceous, lots, you know, big bosom?
Yeah. Basketballs pushed down inside a spandex leotard, things like that.
The standard R. Crumb female, in other words.
No. Crumb never drew me. The first artist who drew me as... Well, he'd been doing a lot of illustrations for a local strip joint for ads or something like that. So I came out looking like a Barbie doll. And I'm not even talking about the new modified Barbie doll who has had breast reduction surgery or something like that. I was long-legged, straight-backed, you know, enormous front. And the weird thing was that I was blonde. Harvey and I have the same color hair. And there are plenty of pictures of us, and there'd be pictures of us standing together in the same light. He'd be the brunette, I'd be blonde. And I remember bringing this to the artist's attention after it was done, and he said, "Oh, my God, you're not blonde." And that's because in comic books, women are supposed to be voluptuous and blonde and completely not looking like me.
So... Did the artist comply with your request? And Harvey had it.
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, we part of the fun of all this is to send it out and see what somebody's going to come back with. It's not, we'd be drawing them ourselves if we really wanted to have that kind of control.
Harvey, did you want Joyce to be portrayed as more glamorous than she was in real life, or did you want it to be as true to who she was as possible, just as you wanted your own depiction to be as true to yourself?
Yeah, I wanted things to be accurate, but
we weren't paying this guy enough money to start insisting on major changes.
I have to say though that I think Joyce looked a lot less like a female superhero than her remarks would lead you to believe.
Well, Harv, this is the...
He did draw you with glasses.
The first artist that I'm talking about was Mitch.
Yeah, I know who
it
was.
Okay, afterwards, we never worked with him again. and afterwards...
I worked with him one more time.
One more time, yeah. But other artists got the point because, we're more direct about it. And then I started coming out looking like this harpy with rays coming out of my eyes, deadly rays that would bore into Harvey's head while he would not wash the dishes appropriately, things like that.
Yeah.
Joyce, when you got married to Harvey, you knew that you would be a character in his stories because the stories are autobiographical. And mm-hmm. so it changed your life not only because you now had, a partner in life. You were also in a position where parts of your life together were going to be described in this comic book. What was it like for you to suddenly be a part of the comic book that you had read and to know that things that you said... things that you did might end up in the story?
Well, it was a little annoying because I could no longer enjoy the comics once a year. I always knew what was going in, and so I was deprived of that, the experience of just opening a fresh new copy and finding out what had happened to this character this year. But it was sort of incumbent upon me to make sure that our marriage had a happy ending. I first became really aware of what was going on when, after about a year or so, people, send fan mail to Harvey all the time, and we got letters that said things like, well, we weren't real sure about you, in issue 9, but now that we've seen what's going on issue 10, it seems like you're here to stay and you're good for our man. And so, the marriage was approved of by all these people who don't know who we are, but just read about us in comics.
That's kind of weird, isn't it? I mean, to have readers weighing in on whether you're the right choice.
it's either people like that or relatives, and Harvey didn't come with a whole lot of in-laws and relatives.
That's funny. So you have to please the readers.
Yeah. And it matters just about as much. We see them and hear from them about as often as you'd hear from, long-distant aunts and cousins. And
There's parts in American Splendor, the comic, and American Splendor, the new movie, where you seem to drive each other a little crazy. What's it like to expose that part of the relationship to the public? That's the kind of stuff people like to not have people see.
Well, actually, in my case, it's very liberating because now that everybody sees what I have to put up with, people are almost offended if Harvey doesn't have a meltdown or something, or do something gauche, or
it's like part of the show.
Whatever. I think it's when you try and hide these things, you get into trouble. But now, it's like he gets paid to be this way. He gets paid to be squirrely.
Harvey, what's your take on this?
Well, I don't deliberately act, neurotic, although I guess I am. But I don't try, I don't do it because anybody's paying me to do it. And I'm glad that Joyce allows me, so easily to write about our disagreements and stuff like that, because I don't want to idealize our marriage. At the same time, we've been together for 20 years now, and we're still working things out, and we're still, growing. And I think it's a good marriage.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner, and Harvey writes the American Splendor autobiographical comic books. There's a new movie adaptation of American Splendor, and it stars Paul Giamatti as Harvey Pekar and Hope Davis as Joyce Brabner. And how many years have you been married? 20 years?
Yes.
20.
20.
One of the best-known works that you did was a collaboration between you and Joyce called Our Cancer Year, about the year that you were diagnosed with lymphoma and you had chemo, and you were very, very sick. But then you went into remission and seemed to be clear. And was it after retirement that it came back?
Yeah, that's where...
It came back right after the movie wrapped.
So did you have to do chemo all over again?
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad physically as last time. Actually, Harvey had been pronounced cured, and so this might actually be coincidental rather than related. But it was still really, really rough because he was still kind of depressed and out of sorts trying to find his way after retiring. I mean, he'd retired, begun working on this movie, and then, boom, he's got a tumor again.
In what way was it not as bad as the first time around?
Medically, because when Harvey had his treatment 10 years ago, it was horrific. They were telling him he was taking the second harshest form of chemotherapy, the second harshest protocol, and it was very rough on him, but this time physically it was better. There was a lot of deja vu, though. I mean, George Bush was president then. George Bush was president when he had lymphoma this last time. We were in a Persian Gulf War. The first time he had cancer, another Persian Gulf War. I was involved with 15-year-olds from different countries who were war survivors, and now I'm guardian to a 15-year-old girl. So it kind of felt like we were stuck in the same tape loop.
I think one of the main reasons that I didn't suffer as much the second time as the first time around when I had cancer was that they'd come up with some milder medication.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They had much mm-hmm. better medication.
So did the doctors give you the all clear this time around?
Yeah, I'm in remission again.
Good.
I was just found in remission again last... it's been some months since I've been in remission, but I just saw the doctor last Friday, and I'm still in remission, so...
Good.
Knock on wood.
Harvey, I'd like to ask you a few things about your background, starting with your parents. This comes from one of your comics you wrote about your family's attitude toward getting into fights when you were a kid. You wrote, "My family considered physical violence and even sports as unthinkably barbaric activities fit only for Gentiles." Tell me a little bit about your parents.
Well, my parents were both from northeastern Poland, from shtetls. My mother's from a place called Brestovice, and my father's from a place called Nowy Dwór. And my mother came over to the United States first in the 1920s. And I don't know, I think maybe partly because she was, like, really short, you know. She couldn't find a husband. And she got sent back to Europe again in 1935, and I guess at that time, she was supposed to be, or maybe my relatives who were still there were supposed to be, you know, looking out for her and trying to find her somebody. And she did come up with my father. My father's, as long as I've known him, my father's been real religious, and my mother was a communist. We were for Henry Wallace in 1948, but they seem to have resolved their differences that way. I know that
they were both short.
Yeah, well, my mother wouldn't go to shul on the high holidays and stuff like that. But they got along. They respected their differences. I don't know of too many cases that are like that, because they both believe pretty strongly in what they in my mother's case in her politics, and my father's case in his religion.
I could see how both a communist parent and a religious parent would think that reading comic books was frivolous and something to be discouraged. What did your parents think of your interest in comic books and music or any other parts of pop culture?
Well, they thought, yeah, they thought it was just a waste of time. I didn't read comic books from the age of 11 until like I moved out of the house, so that was one thing they didn't have to worry about. But, I mean, and my father tried to be tolerant of jazz, although I don't think he liked it very much. He collected Chazanishe records, you know.
What kind of records? Like
Chazanishe, cantors.
Oh.
The records of cantors, like Yisula Rosenblatt or Moishe Kosovitsky there used to be a guy that used to sing for the Met that was also a cantor by the name of Richard Tucker. I don't know if you know about him.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so my father he was into collecting these records too. I wasn't the first record collector in the family.
Did you like those cantor records?
At first, they just made me so depressed and sad. I couldn't take them. But
why were they depressing?
That's the way they. Have you heard them? You've heard them, haven't you?
Well, I've heard cantors. I'm not sure I've heard the records that you're talking about.
Yeah, but the style is extremely, you know, it's really, you know, like a melancholy. Pain style of singing, and I really like it now, I really do. But I collected about, I don't know, maybe 100 or more cantorial LPs, you know, just have so that I could refer to them, and but it's. Well, one guy described it as the cantors were men with tears in their voices.
Right.
It's sort of like I don't want to make it too close an analogy, but it's sort of like equivalent to blues singing in a way.
I regret that we're really out of time, so one last question for you both.
Okay.
How do you and how do you not want the movie adaptation of American Splendor to change your lives?
The big thing about doing the movie is access. It grants Harvey access to more chances to work, which means he isn't going to hang around the house and drive me crazy. And he can, you know, I mean, he's, you know, as somebody who's self-educated and been self-published for as long as he was, I think at this point it'd be nice if he wouldn't have to keep proving himself every time he got a gig. So we like that. According to form, we're supposed to get divorced as soon as the movie peaks.
I mean, because that's what happens when
that's just what
when
happens
celebrity when, strikes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As soon as celebrity strikes, I'm gonna have to run away with a I don't know what cameraman or something like that.
Or Harvey gets to run away with a 25-year-old model, right?
Well, he can't really run.
Perish the thought.
Harvey, what else do you or do you not want from the movie?
Well, it's pretty much like Joyce says. I'd like the opportunity to get more writing jobs. And, you know, like, as a matter of fact, every time somebody will interview me or something like that, well, I'm not going to do this to you, Terry, but I would ask them if there's anything, you know, anything at their magazine or anything like that that I could do. Can I write some jazz criticism for you? Can I write some, literary criticism for you? I'm pretty aggressive and maybe obnoxious about trying to get work, but I realize that it's really essential that when the dust has settled from this movie, that I still am, you know, somebody that people want to work with.
Are you willing to risk being obnoxious to get that?
Yeah. It comes easy.
Yeah, I don't think there's any risk involved for the being obnoxious. I don't even think there's any willing. I think Harvey is more or less compelled to be obnoxious to get this stuff. He's a very driven character.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't help myself. What can I do?
Well, I regret we're out of time. I really enjoyed talking to you both.
Thanks.
Love the movie, love the comic, and thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Terry.
Harvey Pekar and Joyce Brabner. The new movie American Splendor is based on Pekar's autobiographical comic book series of the same name. It won the Grand Jury Prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival.